Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello everybody, it's me Roscoe, and welcome to the latest Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, sponsored by Stardust Spirits. Use the code KOA to get 20% off your next order. And it's just me and Stu in charge. Stuart Watson is the man who will be in charge of me, but I will be hosting this podcast today. Stuart Watson, my friend, how's things? The season is done and dusted. Town's journey in the Premier League has ended. But yeah, we're going to break down the West Ham game a little bit, discuss other little bits and bobs. How are you, my friend? You had a good bank holiday weekend?
Yes, not too bad, thank you. It was nice to just mentally take off 24, 48 hours from thinking about Ipswich Town. I've forgotten how draining it is, sort of talking about defeats and a bit more negativity. It's been a little while, hasn't it? We enjoyed it while the sun was shining on the club. But yeah, now we have to get our teeth stuck into a relegation campaign. So yeah, shall we do it?
Yeah, we shall. Yeah, it feels very different to the relegation in 2019, you know, from, you know, getting relegated from the Championship to League One. And obviously that was the first time the club had been in the third tier since like the 50s. So it was a very weird situation. But obviously we ended the season with a 3-2 win against Leeds that time around. This time around, it was a 3-1 defeat at home to West Ham, Stu. Just your overall thoughts on the result, sort of same old story. Obviously, we're not going to go too in-depth on the... I don't think many people... It's not an appetite to review the season as a whole. There'll be little bits and bobs we'll do, but sort of story of the season, you know, 3-1, mistakes here and there.
Yeah, I think people will be interested to get some reflections on the season. Probably not this game in general. Won't pick it to pieces, but how many times have we said that sums up the season? And that game certainly falls into that category in terms of Ipswich very much in it for most of the first half, had the better chances probably of the two. It certainly had a bit of an end of season dead rubber vibe about it, but and then a mistake, Sam Morsy mistake, punished, 1-0 down just going into half time, get level, didn't last long enough, and go on to lose 3-1. Third goal's a lost duel in midfield. What was the second goal? Remind me, Ross. Oh, Bowen was just a bit of what, you know, I think you have to say top class Premier League quality, with the exchange of passes and the finish as well. So, yeah, season in a nutshell. I think I wrote on Twitter, very much in it, rarely win it. And that's been the tale of Ipswich's season, really.
Yeah, pretty much. And we'll hear from Kieran McKenna, though, on the defeat. Let's see that and we'll just discuss a little bit. A few more little bits from the game, because there's some sort of positives, but obviously a few negatives as well.
Kieran, unfortunately, another home defeat to finish the season. How do you reflect on today?
I thought it was an even game, well balanced game. We've done a lot of good things to compete with West Ham and at times be the better team. If I'm honest, I thought we had more chances in the game than them. And yeah, it's probably, we've spoken lots this year about the different categories of games, but I think it's probably reflective of, you know, the challenges and the level that we haven't quite been able to hit. So I think against most of the teams in most of the games this year, we're able to compete in terms of our principles, our organisation, our football between both boxes. We're able to get to good positions and good areas. But the execution of, you know, the top end players in this division with the experience and the calibre that they have, they execute more often than ours. You can see that, I think, in the first two West Ham goals, to be honest, with Jared Bowen's execution on both. The first one, I know it's a mistake from Sammy, but, you know, we're still around cover and the defender can still block it. the goalkeeper can still save it, and he produces a reverse pass to somebody with basically an empty net, which is top level play. And then we get back to 1-1, and he picks it up from on the touchline and beats a player and smacks it in the net. That's part of the difference. You know you're facing against the best players in the world every weekend, and the best and wealthiest teams in the world. Individual challenges, physicality of the league is really, really important. We lose a duel for the third goal, and if you lose a duel or you lose a physical challenge in this division, then very often it ends up with a chance. So I think today you can see some of the things that we've done well to compete this year. Spirit was good, organisation was good, players worked really hard, played some good football, got to good positions. But our West Ham team executed better than us in both boxes, and they take the points.
They do indeed, Stu. And I know people are going to get tired of this, but I'm just taking a look at the starting 11, because six of that starting 11 were part of the League One promotion campaign. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, Christian Walton was the sort of surprise sort of starter in the end, because obviously Alex Palmer pulled up with illness in the warm-ups. But yeah, mate, it's still an incredible journey. You know, six of that starting 11, as I said, were playing League One football only 2 years ago.
Yeah. As you say, people are bored of hearing it, but it is fact, it is reality. Ipswich started the season with a fair chunk of those, let alone the Championship promotion winning team, but the League One promotion winning team in the starting 11, and they finished it that way as well. As you say, Walton, a late replacement for Palmer, bit of a vomiting bug going around the camp. Palmer sort of succumbed to that half an hour before kickoff. You still had Leif Davis at left back, Morsi in midfield, and then the front four of Hutchinson, Chaplin, Broadhead and Hurst. So, yeah, very much a League One / Championship promotion winning feel to that team. Compare and contrast to West Ham. They had, let's just pick out a few. They brought on Kudus off the bench. They brought on Paqueta off the bench, you know, for starters. Full Krug up front, German international, cost, I think, £27 million. Last season. Bowen, who we know has been one of the top performers in the Premier League for a little while now. Max Kilman, they spent a hell of a lot of money on at centre-half last summer. Wan-Bissaka, ex-Manchester United. Ward-Prowse, capped by England. We could go on and on, couldn't we? Yeah. So that and that's a West Ham team who finished, where did they finish in the end? They were 15th going into the game. So in and around that sort of lower reaches of the table. I think that probably sums up the challenge that Ipswich were facing this season.
Yeah, but you know what? Still, I thought it was we started, you know, the first half pretty well. You know, sort of front foot, but just once again, sort of summed up the season. Just no end product in the end. You know, there's a few chances here and there, and that is obviously a lot of frustrating with, you know, with town fans. It's like, we're just so near, but just so far away.
Yeah, it's been that, hasn't it? It's the higher you go, the more ruthless and clinical the opposition is. You might get away with the odd lost duel on the halfway line or the odd sloppy pass that puts you in a bit of danger the lower down the divisions. But in the Prem, 9 times out of 10, it gets punished. So I would say that sort of clinicality in both boxes is where Ipswich have come up short. You can accept, like, the Bowen second goal. Sometimes, as I keep saying, you can hold your hands up to that at this level. It happens. What has been harder to stomach has been some of the goals that Ipswich have conceded this season in terms of the ones that have been self-harm. It's tough enough as it is without giving the opposition a bit of a leg up, and they've done that too many times this season. Ipswich ended up scoring, just having a little look, 36 Premier League goals. And if I get time, I'm going to try and sit down and rank them all. And there are some belters in there, isn't there? The Broadhead goal is another really good one, a thumping finish from the edge of the box. You go back through the season and you think about Nciso's goal at Everton, Kajusta's goal against Forest, which was a goal of the month for the Premier League, some of Delap's goals in the early part of the season, rampaging forwards. I've scored some really good goals, world-class goals, dare I say, but have conceded some really poor ones. And that's been the disappointment.
Yeah, I don't think you want to rank the goals conceded, because it's 82 in total, which is not good. It's the second worst. Obviously, Southampton, 86 goals conceded, Leicester, 80. So the three relegated teams who obviously got promoted have conceded a lot of goals. 36 scored. And obviously, Stu, we've already spoken about this before, but the home record isn't great. Just having a quick look at the stats, how I read. So 19 played, 1 win, 4 draws, 14 defeats, minus 30 goal difference. So 7 points in total. And obviously, ending the season with, where's the stat? Can't bloody see it.
Nine straight home defeats to end the season in the league. So from that Chelsea win onwards, 0 points in 2025 at Portman Road, which even when you probably put into play all of the fairly sizable caveats, injuries, etc., that's not good enough, is it? That's been really disappointing. There's no getting away from that. And then, you know, coupled with that, one of the things to pick the bones out of for everyone in the club is why the second half of the season was worse than the first. I think there was quite a fair bit of positivity in that first half of the season. The way Ipswich had sort of attacked the league, had been in games, had maybe let some opportunities slip. But from January onwards, it's been pretty demoralising, hasn't it? And I don't know if that is just a psychological confidence factor with the players taking a hit, whether there was a sort of a surprise factor about Ipswich in the early part of the season and the way they approached games. As I say, injuries definitely have to be taken into account, and certainly the way they kind of got grouped in certain positions, right wing being hit hardest the most. But, you know, we hoped that Kieran McKenna is a student of the game, and he'll learn some lessons along the way, and he'll make sure that the team improve and get better, and they'll finish strong. And we looked at that final month on paper of Everton, Brentford, Leicester, West Ham, and I was thinking, if they could get to May within touching distance, that's not a bad set of fixtures to finish. And they've ended up with, you know, relegated going into those games and taking 1 point from them, Everton away. So yeah, it's a really disappointing way for a season we've waited so long for to finish.
And normally, obviously, we finished 19th in the end. So, you know, we were second bottom, which, you know, we're hoping we're going to be like at least finish 18th, and we're not obviously as bad as the other two. But in the end, that was the case. But yeah, obviously, there's going to be more reflection on Sean McKenna and co. will be doing that. One thing, though, Stu, is there was, at the end, you know, the sort of the lap of appreciation, it was more the obviously the players clapping the fans. You know, normally it was relegation in 2019, it was actually the fans clapping off the players, you know, to relegation. This time around, it was the players going, thank you so much for your support, because most town fans have stuck with this team.
Yeah, I was pleased to see that. I think that was no surprise, because we saw the reaction up at Newcastle when relegation was confirmed. We've seen the supporters being there. You know, as the song goes, follow the town up or down. That is the very definition of support, is being there for the team in the bad times as well as the good. And this group, from the manager, the players down, has, yeah, lots of credit in the bank still, I would say. I'm not saying everything about this season was great. Of course, there's been some things that they've got wrong. And that's natural. And, you know, I've said before, it's not what Ipswich should have done differently. I think there's a genuine case of, could they have done much different? Don't think it's been through lack of effort. I just think they've got there too soon. And you can never get somewhere too soon, because they'll have banked the TV money. The club will be in a better place financially, infrastructure-wise, and all of that. But from a competing point of view, they got to the Premier League too soon. It's very hard to build a squad in one transfer window. A lot was made of Ipswich spending £100-125 million over the last two windows. But I look at that Premier League table now, and the fact that Tottenham are one above the drop zone and Manchester United finished 15th tells me about the strength in depth of this division now. I know everyone's sort of saying it's been a boring Premier League season. From a neutral, I get it. Liverpool kind of didn't, you know, in the end sort of romped to the title, and we got a little bit of excitement around who would finish fifth on the, you know, on the final day and whatnot. But in general, the three went down. There wasn't any jeopardy there. So I get that. But I think it says to me that middle group from Forest through to Bournemouth, Brighton, Fulham, Palace winning the FA Cup, that says to me that those now, if you look at how long those clubs have been in the Premier League, they are becoming really established. And that means that those squads they've built have been built over what Ipswich have tried to build in two transfer windows. Those teams have probably built them over 10, 15, 20, 25 transfer windows. That's a big ask to try and suddenly compete with that. And in general, Ipswich have had more competitive days than not in matches. And I know they've come up short repeatedly, and there's a reason for that. But I think it's also fair to say that there's no shame in saying that Ipswich have fallen short this season. It was always going to be a monumental ask.
Yeah, and especially you think as well, the ownership, you know, has only been with us for 4 years, and they've had to redo a lot of things at the club. Obviously, the training ground's getting redone and everything like that. When a lot of clubs obviously are established, and you know, like last year we were using Brighton's recruitment, you know, dashboard and stuff. And obviously this year, Brighton go, "You're our rivals now, we can't use it." So we're still, you know, building on that. And that's obviously a big talking point to do, is the recruitment. Was it right? Once again, hindsight is a wonderful thing. Like Alex Palmer, should have signed him in the summer instead of Muric. All that sort of stuff. Obviously, injuries have not helped. And it sounds like we're giving the club some excuses, but it is hindsight a lot of time.
Well, yeah, okay. Let's start with recruitment then, because that's probably a topic in terms of Ipswich didn't get the recruitment right. I've seen a few comments along the lines of, would we have been any worse off if we'd have just stuck with the promotion winning team, and we've lost the camaraderie and the spirit and the team chemistry that was kind of built over a period of time. First thing to say on that is, if the club had done very little last season in terms of transfer business, what would the reaction have been then? No ambition, not good enough. So I think the club trod a really fine path between trying to be ambitious, recognising they needed to bring in more to help the group, but also kept, you know, the core of that starting 11. It was only Kladke that left, wasn't it, last summer? I didn't feel at the time, this isn't being smart with hindsight, that was a position that they needed to meddle with too much. We'll never know how Faz would have done in the Premier League. Obviously, it didn't work out with Muric. But, I think in terms of kind of adding and keeping the core, I think they just about got that right. In terms of, should they have just started the same team? Even if they wanted to, they wouldn't have been able to. Broadhead was injured for most of pre-season and didn't get fit till the autumn time. Chaplin had just got his place back leading up to Christmas, and then he does his knee and it took him ages to get back. Wes Burns, season-ending injury in January, having, you know, played the majority of games up until that point. And then Morsi's played most of the minutes. Leif Davis has played most of the minutes. Axel Twenzebi is when fit, has started most of the time at right back. And then other positions, are you really going to say that George Hirst should have played over Liam Delap every week, given what he's done? Is anyone really going to say that Luongo, as much as we all love him and we've had the emotional farewell, would have done a better job than Jens Kajusta in midfield? Likewise, O'Shea versus Wolfenden. Maybe the strongest argument you could make is Burgess over Jacob Greaves. But Greaves is a younger man with a higher ceiling going forward. So I'm not so sure about this shout of kind of should have just stuck with the same team. And I don't think they've suddenly lost the team spirit and the culture within the squad when you speak to the players. I think that is still evident there. So they were never going to get everything right by law of averages in terms of recruitment. And Alex has done a piece online today sort of rating the transfer hits and misses. And I do honestly think there's probably been, within the context of what this season's been and the assets that Ipswich have still got in some of these players, more hits than misses. I mean, if I was to say to you now, who have been the misses been? You know, Muric is the obvious one. He's the poster boy for that. What other ones would you say are nailed on, just hasn't worked out?
Like, obviously, Godfrey potentially, but obviously we were a bit surprised with that signing in January. Yep. Like, it's not his fault, even Ben Godfrey. He's not even played much football, you know, with his Italian club.
Yeah, I think I was surprised when they, again, not hindsight, but we said at the time, obviously he's got Premier League pedigree when he signed, but we couldn't really work out where he fitted into things, and so that's proved. Were there more important gaps to plug in January than that sort of right back centre half position? Probably. So I think that's fair to highlight that one as a miss.
Callum Phillips, obviously, but then once again, we were excited with that signing, weren't we? Because it's like his name, England international, but obviously injuries, you know, have obviously not helped. And obviously he got sent off during that time where he's like getting up to speed and doing well. But yeah.
Again, that's a miss against the context of injuries, isn't it? We'll never know how much of an impact Calvin Phillips had he been able to rattle out the games. Yeah, likewise, Agbene falls into that category. Phillips, Agbene, yes, you'd have to say in the cold light of day they've been misses, but misses with the caveat of not been fit. So it feels a bit harsh when you talk about that, doesn't it? In terms of being fit and available and just not being good enough or not being at the level or haven't contributed, there's not loads that jump off the page, mate. I'm just thinking now off the top of my head.
Philogene, maybe, but then he got injured during the time, and maybe if he signed him in the summer, then...
Yeah, I think the jury's out there, isn't it? I mean, he obviously, you know, he wasn't able to hit the ground running, and I think, but, you know, time will tell, won't we, in terms of whether that is... And again, what did they need to do that in January? Was that the best use of a near club record spend? They've got themselves in a bit of a muddle in a couple of situations. The goalkeeper one is obviously one now. They've now gone out and got Palmer, so they've got four senior goalkeepers. They need to unpick that. Likewise now, they've sort of collected a lot of very similar kind of skillful, lightweight, attacking players, sort of versatile attacking players, and where are they all going to fit in next season when you've now got, you know, essentially they tried to get Philogene last summer, didn't, got Jack Clark instead. Then the opportunity came to get Philogene, they got him. So again, now you're looking at that, and when players are all fit, where do they all fit into things? So, you know, I would say, yeah, January, maybe did they address the right areas is certainly something that, you know, would be a fair thing to analyse.
Yeah, and another big talking point is like maybe they didn't bring enough Premier League experience because, yeah, they brought some of the best youth, young English players out there, but maybe they should have maybe signed Premier League. But then that costs a little bit. Well, we've actually spent a lot of money on these young players. So actually, it's a tricky one to address, really, because you just never know.
Yeah. And the vibe I get sort of speaking to people at the club is that they were aware they wanted to get some more Premier League experience, but it just wasn't viable within the constraints of FFP. It's not just transfer fees. People get a bit fixated by transfer fees, but it's wages and it's lengths of contracts and it's the clauses that these players want. If you're an established Premier League player, you might be able to sell the Ipswich project to them, McKenna, Upperley Mobile Club, etc., etc., but are they going to take a relegation release? A relegation reduction clause that your wages are going to get cut in half if we get relegated? Probably not. And are Ipswich able to kind of take that risk that, you know, say they'd gone out and got, I don't know, I don't want to pluck a name out of thin air, but there wasn't loads of kind of experienced Premier League players that were jumping off the page that were gettable. Mm-hmm. Last summer, I can't remember the sort of people we talked about, someone like Danny Ings at West Ham, etc. But were they willing to kind of take relegation clauses? Possibly not. And were Ipswich, do we want Ipswich to be sensible and risk adverse in terms of not putting the club in a potentially difficult situation going forwards? I think we want that, don't we? So saying they should have got more experience and the club being able to do it are probably two different things. They did obviously get Calvin Phillips, and unfortunately he wasn't fit for most of the season. So I'm not sure that that's a particularly fair stick to beat them with. What I would say in terms of attributes, and this is probably one of the big reflections, is they didn't get enough physicality. They didn't get enough athleticism. I think that's probably been an eye-opener to the Premier League, and, you know, Kieran McKenna's seen it up close and personal more recently than we have as Ipswich followers through his role as Manchester United assistant manager. He's brought in a lot of very good technical players, but I think there's been a lot of games where I think Ipswich have looked undersized. I think that's cost them a bit at set pieces at times. I think that's cost them in open play. Just these players, it's shocked me watching it up close and personal how ultra fit they are. They're big, they're muscly, they're athletic. And I think, you know, if Ipswich can get themselves back to the Premier League, that is something that they will look to readdress next time, I would say.
Yeah, very much so. We've got a few more clips to play from McKenna and Connor Chaplin. So we'll play one here now with Kieran McKenna talking about the season and the fans as well. So, K-Dog, over to you.
We've talked a lot, and certainly in recent weeks, about the challenge and why you've come up short. And you always talk with great sort of nuance and context. But I wondered if you could boil it down to sort of one word this season in a nutshell. How would you describe it?
No, I'm nowhere near clever enough for that, Stuart. You'll do a much better job with me than that. I could write you a book, or we could do a fantastic podcast together, but one word would be too much of a challenge.
Hold you to that. The reaction at the end from the fans, again, we've spoken about them a lot, but you know, to get that reception after finishing 19th with one home win all season is quite something.
No, it isn't. We got fantastic supporters, and no doubt about it. It's a special football club in that way, and it's, you know, we're so grateful for it. They're also, I think, a sensible supporter base. They see the jump, they see the climb, they see a group of players there, and many of them on the pitch today and have been every week, who've made an incredible climb really, really quickly, and are now trying to compete at the toughest league in the world in a group that not many of them have competed at that level before. And they see a group of not many weeks, I don't think you could question the commitment of being there every week, of give everything to it. They see a club that's very much still together and united, and they've been a massive part of that, and they've been right behind it. So that's going to be really important for us going forward. We finish the season, of course, not with the outcome that we want, but still very much together, and that gives us a really, you know, strong position going into the years ahead.
So, yeah, Stu, make sure you hold Kieran McKenna to that podcast in the future. And I'm actually going to put you on the spot, just like you did Kieran McKenna. What is your one word, my friend, to sum up this season?
Yeah, I was thinking about that, because I probably should have been prepared in case that had got flipped back on me. The one Mark Ashton always uses is brutal. The one that I've probably used the most has been sobering, in terms of anything and everything felt possible riding that wave of momentum, this, you know, this promised land, the land of milk and honey, the Premier League, something that we'd kind of watched from afar, a generation that had never known Ipswich at that level. We got back to it, and it's been a real kind of sobering. That it's felt like, you know, if you go back to the celebrations from promotion and the bus parade and Harry Clark at the front of that, The from the highs of that, it has been a bit of a back down to earth with a real bump, hasn't it? It's kind of opened our eyes to the reality of what the jump to the Premier League has been. So, I don't think it's as bad as it seems from the outside looking in. You look at the league table of like you say, four wins, only one at home, 22 points. They finished 16 adrift in the end. I think they've been better than that suggests, by pure numbers. I would say there's been a lot more games where you'd say there's, you know, if you look at the draws, there's been a lot more draws where you'd say Ipswich were the more likely to win it than lose, in terms of leaving points out there. You know, we know it's 27 points dropped from winning positions. I looked at it. Ipswich are actually outside the relegation zone if games finished on 75 minutes. Man United would be relegated in that scenario. So that says to me that they have done an awful lot to be competitive in a lot of games. And there are reasons, many, why they've not been able to do it in terms of squad depth, in terms of experience, in terms of physicality, in terms of games management. Yeah, not everything has been wrong about this season, and hopefully they can use a few of the lessons. And again, I know that's a phrase that is triggering some people into eye rolls, and along with the journey, inverted commas. But that is honestly where I'm at. It's not me trying to be a cheerleader for the club or having blue tinted specs on. I think if they can use the lessons from this season the right way and keep sort of building on the progress behind the scenes, it's not all been a complete disaster.
No, and I think next week we're going to be sort of looking back at our predictions and probably laughing at them and going, oh dear, we got that very, very wrong. I think all of us predicted Town to potentially stay up, but I think maybe 17th. I think there's a few people maybe went mad and go, yep, European football, why not? But I think deep down everyone knew this was going to be a hard task. And
yeah, I felt that the kind of we can do anything and we might even replicate, you know, 2001 and surprise a few people and be right up there. I think I was aware that the landscape had changed a lot since then. I think 17th and stay up with the final kick. And it felt the right thing to do at that moment in time to kind of predict that they could stay up. But I knew it was going to be tough, but I didn't realise it was going to be as tough as it was, to be honest. So, yeah, sobering, eyes wide open. We go again. All the cliches coming out, Ross. Oh, left, right, and centre.
Got to be done. Definitely at the end of the season, you bring it all out. But yeah, I think next week, all of us boys, obviously Heathie and AJ, will be back to look back at our predictions. And I'm sure there's some tough ones to look back on. But let's hear though from Connor Chaplin. Good to see him sort of finish the season off with some games. Just spoke about the fans and also next season in the Championship.
After the game then, nice slap of appreciation. You had the kids on the pitch. How was that for you?
Yeah, I think it's important. I think it's important from our side to show our appreciation for the fans. I think the last two or three years speaks for itself. It's easy to be a fan when you're coming off the last 2 years, but to be how they've been all season, when we've not won a lot of games, to keep coming in the numbers, to keep making a lot of noise, I think they've been a credit to the football club. I think they've been an incredible part of making this journey enjoyable as it can be, even though we've not won as many games. And that was a big part of the motivation today. We really, really, really wanted to get a win for the fans to go off in the summer with a win. That's probably the biggest disappointment from today, from my part, because I feel like they've been incredible all season. And look, we need them to stick with us. We need them to understand that next season is going to be another challenge, and to keep a positive spin on everything. This club's in an incredibly better position than it was 12 months ago. A relegation doesn't change that. The club's on an upward trajectory for sure. But like I say, to bridge the gap, the fans are going to help us massively as well.
Next season, the ambition's going to be to go again and to get promotion.
Yeah, of course, it has to be. I think there's too much to be said about that. We know it's a incredibly tough league, especially with the teams that have come down and the teams that have come up in terms of finances. It's probably going to be one of the hardest championships for a long, long time in terms of the stature of the clubs there. But obviously the goal is the goal.
Challenge looking forward to, though?
Yeah, of course. I think if you're not looking forward to that and you can't get yourself up for that, then there's something seriously wrong.
Yeah, can't wait for us too, because yeah, there'll be more wins, ladies and gentlemen. Town should hopefully win more games, especially at home as well. We'll draw a line on the Premier League season. Obviously, as well, we are going to record a podcast next week on looking back at our predictions. But where should we go from here, my friends? Obviously, Championship, we're going to be favourites. How do you feel about that? You know, I don't think we're going to run away with it, but obviously Town will be, you know, with the betting odds already, we're favourites.
Mm-hmm. My initial reaction to that is feeling deeply uncomfortable. Yeah. Because that can come back to bite you. And I go back to the first season down in League One, and it was HMS Pista League and 100 goals, 100 points. And this is going to be fun. We're going to go to a few new grounds. And that sort of peaked with the hand-waving celebrations at Fleetwood early on after getting off to a great start with Norwood and Jackson scoring all the goals and Joey Barton saying, I'm not sure if this is built on as solid foundations as people think. And of course, it all horribly went wrong from there. And it took 4 years for Ipswich Town to get out of that. It's been a long time since Ipswich have, you know, that was probably the last time Ipswich had gone into a season with real high expectations. Before that, you know, certainly in my time covering the club from sort of the Paul Jewell era onwards, have never had that kind of favourites tag. So it's going to be a new thing for everybody to deal with. They're going to be have targets on their back. They're going to be there to be shot at, and teams will raise their game when they come to Portman Road. So that's my initial reaction, is kind of feeling a little bit uncomfortable about that, and that it's a big mindset shift to go from losing every week and being massive underdogs to suddenly being expected to win every week. But then the sort of logical part of my brain kicks in, and I look at the Championship this season. Famous last words, I think Ipswich are in a different position to Luton in terms of how it all went wrong for them, in terms of stature at club and everything that underpins it. They're far more likely to be a Burnley or a Sheffield United. And then, of course, you couch that with Sheffield United didn't get it over the line. But the gap between that top three, four and the rest was vast. I go back to the Coventry game in the Cup this season, and Ipswich did to Coventry what a lot of Premier League clubs had done to them. Wasn't a lot in it for large spells, but ultimately ran out comfortable 4-1 winners because they were just more ruthless and had more depth, etc. So, yeah, logically speaking, Ipswich have to be top two contenders next season. No doubt about it. That has to be the target going into it. Now, you know, whether is there any way that they can not get promoted next year and that still be deemed okay and acceptable? I guess the example would be Sheffield United this year, Leeds the year before, that you could end up with a 90-odd point season and still not quite do it, finish third and not quite do it in the playoffs. There is still that chance. But it's going to be very interesting, both from players and fans, how everyone kind of goes into next season. They need to get off to a good start. They really do.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting who we play. And obviously, you've got teams coming up, you know, Wrexham, obviously, and Birmingham are going to be interesting teams getting promoted. And obviously, Charlton have gone up as well. And obviously, yeah, Sunderland went up instead of Sheffield United, as you mentioned. So obviously, we now know where we'll be going, Stu, home and away next season. But yeah, obviously, it's going to be a summer of change, Stu, because obviously, there's going to be some players leaving, other bits and bobs that are going to happen. Obviously, I'm sure Town will go and sign players. I want to have a nice little segment now talking about Massimo Luongo, my friend, because Kieran McKenna, prior to the West Ham game, confirmed he'll be leaving this summer. And what a journey he's been on. You know, of course, he originally joined on loan back in 2012 from Spurs, and obviously had a journey planned for Swindon and QPR and Sheffield Wednesday and stuff. And of course, rejoins, you know, on trial from Middlesbrough after getting released from them in December, then signed as a free transfer and obviously been part of this incredible group, you know, back-to-back promotions. And yeah, he leaves as a hero because an incredible, best free transfer signing ever in Ipswich Town's history.
Yeah, I think Kieran McKenna went as far as saying possibly the best in football of all time, and went on to sort of point out if somebody wanted to dig out the stats of his win percentage in that first 18 months at the club. Just trying to remember when he made his debut, because he came in, I remember he came in on trial just before Christmas, and I think he even was sort of asked to come in and train on Christmas Day without a contract at that point during that period. And he probably wasn't too enamoured with not seeing his kids on Christmas Day and training for someone that he wasn't employed for, but that probably shows you his desire and his, you know, his mindset as a player. He came in, he got his contract signed, and it took him a little while to get into the team, to get up to speed. But once he got in, he stayed in, and Ipswich was a major part of that. They won 13 of the final 15 games on that charge to promotion in League One, continued that midfield partnership with Sam Morsy in the Championship, was you know, one of the best midfielders in the Championship last season. What to say about Massimo? I mean, as a footballer, he's a real player's player. It's not to say that the fans don't see it, but he's not someone that is going to have a massive highlights reel. He's, you know, he's scored, you know, a few goals and some nice ones in there, but, you know, he's not probably got a flashy highlights reel as a player. But McKenna talks about, and how about this for a compliment? He says he's probably the best I've worked with in terms of football IQ. And you consider that he's coached Cristiano Ronaldo and co at Manchester United and worked with some of the world's best. That is quite something. So he played that sort of left-sided six role, really. And it probably does a lot of things in terms of, you know, we talked about Leif Davis's struggles as a left back in the Premier League. And, you know, we all know his assists record in the Championship and League One. Maybe not to be underplayed how much Massimo Luongo sort of played in that. Someone that can sense danger, that can fill gaps and get drawn out to the left-hand side when he needed to, things like that. So very intelligent footballer off the pitch, really humble guy. I think you could see that in his send-off at the weekend when the player sort of pushed him forwards to have his moment, and he almost seemed a bit reluctant, you know, took his acclaim and then was, you know, wanted to sort of wave it on and, you know, come on, that's enough now, guys. You know, he's been a real pleasure to speak to whenever I've spoken to him. So, yeah, he's obviously had limited minutes this season. I think Kieran McKenna would have kept him as part of the squad next season, no doubt about it. But, you know, there's a World Cup coming up in a year. He's back sort of in amongst the Australia side of things. You know, so he's not standing in his way to go and play plenty of minutes next season. Going to be interesting if he stays in the Championship, if Ipswich run into him. But delighted that he got the send-off that he deserved at the weekend.
Yeah, definitely one of the best. And he also got some great chance, you know, Massimo, And then also Massimo Luongo, you know, he's here. He's here, he's there, he's every, you know, the rest, everybody. But yeah, what a great man. And Connor Chaplin spoke about him as well. So let's hear from Chappers.
Massimo Luongo, you've been here throughout his entire time at Portman Road, his final game today. What have you made of him as a player, his farewell, everything to do with him?
Couldn't possibly speak higher enough of Massi. He's probably one of my closest friends in the group. Going to miss him massively. The impact that he's had, not on just myself, but on the team as a whole, from when he came in that January in League One, has been incredible. I think his statistics show that. He's been one of the best teammates that you could ever wish to have in terms of driving standards every day, in terms of making other people look better. I think I know he's loved here a lot, but I think even with the love that he gets, he's still underappreciated massively until... And it's not anyone's fault, because you have to play with him to appreciate him fully. He makes every single person better. He's so clever. Knows exactly what to do, when to do it. So much nous in the way he plays. And as a guy, he's just an incredible, incredible fella. Real family man. Something that we've really got in common and bonded a lot over. Real family man. Credit to his wife and his kids and the way that he handles himself and the way that he acts every single day. I can't explain how much I've enjoyed the last 2.5 years with him. I love him to bits.
Yeah, Tom Mann will go down as one of the icons of this era, Stu. We're going to be seeing potentially some more farewells in the coming weeks and months. Obviously, the retained list will get released at some stage, and there's a few names on that, my friend. Axel Tuanzebe, Cameron Burgess, I think we've discussed this a little bit, but what's your gut feeling on those two players who are going to be out of contract July 1st?
Yeah, I mean, that's still a up-in-the-air scenario. Going into that final game, obviously, Kieran McKenna was able to tell us that it would be Massimo's final game, but said talks continue with both Cameron and Axel. You know, has said that he'd like to keep both, but understands that they both want to kind of explore their options. Gut feeling... I think Axel's done more than enough to get himself, certainly as a free agent, a move to a Premier League club, maybe one of the newly promoted guys. But I think Ipswich could maybe sell him something if they're able to put him something decent on the table, and if, you know, he's enjoying his time here and he can be a central figure. So haven't completely given up hope on that one. I'm really not sure which way that's going to go. Cameron Burgess, again, the sell is more about sort of game time, isn't it, to him, with Jacob Greaves sort of having that left-sided centre-half role, being in pole position for that. So I would understand if he'd want to go and take something else. The fact that he didn't get introduced on Sunday against West Ham, can we read anything into that? You know, if they felt that it was going a certain way and he was likely to leave, I think Kieran McKenna would have wanted to give him one last time on the pitch, because we'll be talking about Cameron Burgess in the same terms as Massimo Luongo if and when he leaves. So I don't really know, to be honest, Ross. I think they're both really hard to call, those. But as each of these sort of players from the last couple of years leaves, it's going to be tough to say goodbye, isn't it?
Yeah, especially obviously, you know, years prior, it was like actually good riddance that those sort of players are going because they've obviously not been good enough. But these sort of players, it's like, oh, it's sad. Obviously, when Massimo Luongo's video, you know, the club put out, it's like, God, you've got a tear to your eye because like, oh no, you know, one of the guys who have obviously been part of this great journey is leaving. It's sad. And my gut feeling, though, still, I don't know, Axel, Cameron, I don't know, I think they could be going, but. You never know. We'll find out, I'm sure, a bit more. And, you know, I'm sure they'll make the decision when it does come out. But, yeah, obviously, we know Leon Delap's off. So, yeah, we don't need to talk any more about that because, every club under the sun is after him.
Yeah, he's been speaking to people, hasn't he? Obviously, in the build-up to that final game, Manchester United, we know, is one. Everton, we know, is one. David Moyes has confirmed that. There'll be plenty of others. Chelsea, we know, have been an interested party from very early on with the Maresca link. As Kieran McKenna says, he could pretty much have his pick of the Premier League and a lot of clubs in world football at the moment. I was interested to note that in his press conference before West Ham, you know, he was asked how confident he was that he was going to keep the core of this squad together for next season. He said, very confident within the realms of what we want to keep, but an amount of change is healthy, an amount of turnover is healthy. So you go through it, you know, I was thinking it's not going to be a mass exodus this summer, but as time's gone on, you think we'll strip away the four lone players, and Jens is obviously up in the air. That's interesting, the fact that he started and Ciso didn't. And does that suggest that they're trying to get something done? Well, we know they're trying to get something done, but I think the comment from Kieran was that there's still probably a lot of work to do there, but strip away at least three of the lone players, a few of those free, you know, Delap, maybe one or two of the ones coming to the end of their contracts. And then I think there might be, you know, a few more that are sold as well. Will they be interested in Dar O'Shea? Can he keep getting a move back to the Premier League after relegation? He's certainly, I think, come out of this season with a decent amount of credit. Sam Morsi, dare I say, it didn't seem... it wasn't an emphatic, I'm here to stay. He's been asked a couple of times and he's like, well, yeah, I'm under contract, so yeah. But it wasn't like, absolutely, I'm here and I can't wait to lead the team back. So, you know, there's been talk before about Saudi interest in him. Kieran McKenna's talked about that central midfield unit. They need to start thinking about the future there, and that was part of the reason Massimo went. So obviously there's a revamp required in midfield, and then, like I said, there's a goalkeeper situation that needs unpicking. There's maybe, you know, you've got to start thinking about how a Burns and a Benne are going to come back and how quickly they'll get up to speed and whether you need another option there. If you've got too many sort of left-sided attackers with Broadhead, Clark, I think Philogene ultimately they want to see in that role, Schmodix as well. So maybe a little bit more work to do this summer than I kind of first anticipated, really, when you start to think about it.
Yeah, and obviously there's a little bit of interest in Leif Davis as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a busy summer, and it's obviously a quick turnaround because, yeah, it's nearly June, and obviously they're going to have the month off and they'll be back in pre-season in July, and then the season starts at the start of August. So, yeah, it's going to be a quick turnaround, and obviously we know about the summer transfer window. Obviously, 1st of June is the first summer transfer window, and obviously it closes, as we mentioned before, and then opens again on the 16th. So, yeah, it's going to be very busy, I'm sure, for Kieran McKenna and co. And also another thing, Stu, is potential departure from the coaching staff, because Lee Grant, who obviously has been here for the last few years, is going to potentially become the new manager of Huddersfield Town, my friend.
Yeah, we're recording this. What day is it today? Wednesday morning. I think that's sounding likely from people that I've spoken to this morning. It will get interpreted in some quarters as kind of leaving a sinking ship. I think that's grossly unfair. I think it's a good sign that Ipswich are ultimately, to progress as a football club, you have to develop people not just players, but staff and people behind the scenes as well. And I think it's a good thing. Again, you can put a positive spin on the Delap exit in terms of the club not being awkward in, you know, facilitating this move now. And you can use that as a sales pitch to other people that come into the club, that we've got this long list now of players that come in, markedly improve as people, and then when the time is right, we don't stand in their way if it's right for all parties. And I think that this is another example of that. Lee Grant has kind of spoken openly in the past about wanting to become a manager. Huddersfield's a big gig for him. That's a big first gig for him in League One, a club that was in the Premier League not so long ago. So we'll wish him well. I'm sure Kieran and Mark Ashton have got a succession plan for him and the coaching unit. And wish him well. Be interested to see how he does there.
Yeah, because Huddersfield, I think they just missed out on the playoffs. And then obviously they are a big club for League One standards. So it's going to be interesting. And I don't know if it's just near, close to where he sort of was, obviously played for, you know, Burnley, Derby. Obviously he was at Stoke as well. And obviously he went to Man United. But we wish him all the best. But it proves how, you know, McKenna brings these great coaches in and then obviously builds them up. And now he's going to be a first team manager at League One club. So yeah, all the best to Lee when it does get confirmed. Well, Stu, any other business, my friend, as we wrap up another podcast? End of season here. Always the question. I already had this question already when I was playing football on Monday. And Massimo, this is not Massimo Longo, but his nickname is Massimo. He went, oh, so what are you going to do now?
Every summer.
Yeah.
Even my closest family still ask that to me. If anything, this period becomes a little busier and more challenging. Yes, we're not driving off to Newcastle and Everton at weekends, but this is where the real journalism kicks in, where we're trying to separate fact from fiction. There's an insatiable appetite for transfer news, so we'll get stuck into that. Hoping to get a few interviews lined up with people within the club to do a little bit of reflecting on last season. But I think very quickly we need to, you know, there'll be a bit of reflecting on this season, but very quickly eyes forward to next season. Do you want to finish with things you won't miss about the Premier League? Ross, there's an obvious one to kick off with, and that's VAR. Mm-hmm. I knew I wasn't going to like it. I thought I wasn't going to like it from kind of watching it from afar on the TV, but having experienced it within a stadium, and this is with it as a member of the media who is privileged enough to get some video replays in front of me, I hated it. It slows up the game. It nitpicks. Everything looks worse in slow motion. I still don't think it's fulfilling the clear and obvious brief. And we got fairly early on. I mean, was it the Man City game, second game in, where penalty given at one end for City when VAR was correctly used, but then Leif Davis had a very similar one at the other end and decided not to get involved in that. And we can come up with probably 10 different examples, couldn't we, throughout the season where it's been a bit farcical. So I will not miss that.
No, and the one thing I've hated as well in the playoffs, obviously the Sheffield United Sunderland game, that got used. That one game, the most important game in football, pretty much, that's when VAR is used. But in the 46 league games, it doesn't get used. And even League One and League Two got used as well. So
that's a joke. I think if you're playing in a competition, the rules have to be consistent throughout that competition. You can't just suddenly change it for a final. You're right. Silly.
Darkers. Very silly indeed. So VAR, half and half scarves, won't miss those. Although sometimes they do get, I don't know, Wrexham there. Maybe they'll bring them out potentially, because obviously Ipswich Town, Wrexham, that would be a big game. Losing games.
Yeah.
Won't miss that.
Premier League music, intro music, when the teams line up. It's not the Champions League. I find it a bit, I didn't like it. I found it a bit cheesy, to be honest. I'm not bothered by that.
No. I sometimes thought you get such a build up And it's like, it doesn't really need it. Like, I don't know if the club will keep doing the fireworks and stuff and flames. You know, that's sometimes a bit of fun, but sometimes a bit overkill after, like, you know, a bit of a dead rubber game. You're like, don't really need to use that, guys. But there's plenty of things to miss. But funny enough, still, obviously, the last few games, the media interest has gone down. So you're normally the first person to speak to. I think that was always the worry. Is like, oh, God. And I'm sure Kieran McKenna won't miss the loads of interviews he has to do.
No, probably not. I mean, he's very good at giving very fulsome answers to questions. I thought that might tail off over the course of the season, that he might get a little bit fatigued and start shorting his answers, but he hasn't, and that's a real credit to him. But I've now sat through Kieran McKenna being asked about the gap between the Premier League and the Championship and how big the challenge has been, I don't know, 10, 20 times, because you get different members of the national media come along to press conferences. And I understand that is, if you're looking at it through a national lens, that is the topic to discuss. Liam Delap got brought up every week. So, yeah, some of the repetition of kind of jumping on a certain line and being asked about that every few days, I won't miss as well. And having more games, Ross, will be good. Yes. It's felt very slow in places, hasn't it? There's been long periods without matches, with international breaks and very, very few midweek matches, which has felt like a really different rhythm, a very slow rhythm this season. So getting back to the kind of Saturday, Tuesday schedule of the EFL that we all know, I think will give us a bit more to get our teeth into.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, not a quick turnaround for a lot of games. But then I think there's a lot of 12:30 kickoffs now on a Saturday, because obviously I think Sky have taken a lot of them on the red button. So we might have to get ready for a lot of those sort of early mornings, definitely away games. But hopefully, you know, the fixture list is going to be kind to us. And yeah, that's not that far away to do. That's obviously, I think, the 26th of June. So, you know, we'll probably wrap up all the Premier League stuff, and then we're going to get ready to look at what our schedule is for the next season in the Championship. But yeah, the Premier League won't be missed, but at the end of the day, Stu, the goal is to get to the top flight, because that is the promised land. I know a lot of Town fans are they're sick and they're so happy to be out of the Premier League, but
100%, Ross. It can't be. I can't wait to get out of the Premier League, and I don't want to get back there again. And I heard there was a clip on social media the other day about a Sheffield United fan basically saying, I wouldn't be sad if we didn't go up, because I'm already kind of, if we go up, I'd be bracing myself to spending loads of money, travelling the country and seeing us barely get a point all season. And the target will be just not being the worst club in Premier League history. And I do have, you know, sympathy with that viewpoint. But it's a bit defeatist, isn't it, to sort of talk about having been, you know, all those years in the Championship where we were kind of getting fed up of the Championship and bored by the Championship, and now we're suddenly holding it up to be the best league in the world and that's where we want to be, and let's just stay there. No, the goal has got to be to get back to the Premier League, and hopefully, you know, if and when they do get back there, hopefully sooner rather than later, they'll be in a far better position to be more competitive next time around. So, yeah, and let's not kid ourselves. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be a walk in the park. It's known as the most competitive league in the world for a reason. But I do think Ipswich are well equipped to be, as I said to you earlier, competing right up at the top end of it. And that's something to be excited by.
Yeah, and obviously with all the money that comes with it as well. And I'm sure, you know, even just the town centre, you know, when we got promoted, it was unbelievable scenes. And like, why wouldn't you want that again? So let's see what the future holds for Ipswich Town. But Stu, thanks so much for joining me. As he said, there'll be plenty of other content we'll be bringing you during the off-season, special podcasts, many different stuff online. And obviously, we've got to fill a paper. So we've got a lot of content coming your way. And also want to sort of shout out my recent podcast with a Town women's player, legend of the club, Natasha Thomas, because obviously they had a great season. They got promoted. And obviously, they'll be playing second-tier football next year in the WSL2. It's not the Championship now. It's the Women's Super League 2. But a very good chat with Natasha Thomas discussing the season as a whole, and obviously making history for becoming the first international women's player with the football club as a women's player. But yeah, Stu, any other business from you as I ramble on as I normally do with the outro?
No. No, we've probably scratched the surface really of this season, but hopefully that's a little bit of a roundup. Yeah, it's been an experience, hasn't it, off the pitch for us as working members of the media. I'm sure it's been an experience for fans who've waited so long. There has been some highs along the way as well. We've not really touched upon them, but Sammy Schmodic scoring at Man City early on, the overhead kick at Tottenham, Taylor's last-minute winner at Wolves, grinding it out at Bournemouth. We, you know, those the Chelsea game, those are all moments to kind of that have now can't be taken away. They're in the part of history. They're in the memory banks of those that experienced it. Yeah, hopefully Ipswich can get back there and have more of them next time around. But yeah, it's done. It's over with. I think everyone's relieved that that final ball has been kicked. And yeah, all eyes forward now to next season.
Definitely, my friend. And also, we had the Stuart Watson derby with Everton as well. That was lovely. A lovely day. And obviously, Goodison Park, you know, George Hurst is the final sort of away goal scorer.
Mm.
So, nice little stat for George Hurst to take with him for his career. But yeah, thanks everyone for tuning in. So, another Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, of course, sponsored by Stardust Spirits. Use the code KOA to get 20% off your next order. And make sure to follow us on all our Kings of Anglia socials where you can find us. And yeah, bring on the next few weeks and months as we build up to next season. Thanks again for listening. Bye for now.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.